This is CliffCentral.com.
So, Anthea Gardner is here. It is time for us to check in on the money shot for Monday morning. Let's get cracking with that, shall we?
Why say we let such a letter? Anthea Gata, touch a letter. Anthea, why say we let such a letter? Umutware
Hante. That's right. Anthea. All right, Anthea, what do you got for us? The only asset manager in the whole world with a theme song.
Good morning, Gareth. Yes, we had a good day on Friday, actually. The market closed positive. We had some good volume, $1.7 billion traded. Gold stocks, not great. In fact, they were the worst performers. Retailers struggled a bit. Uh-huh. But at least Mediclinic was the best performer on Friday, yeah, because that's a stock that has actually struggled, you know.
Yeah, underperforming. Yeah, nothing really happening.
And it's one of the ones we hold, and we know why we hold it, because we like the expansion story in the Middle East, the hospital builds, and that they have a share in Spire. But the problem, of course, is that now they're looking to buy more of Spire Healthcare in the UK, and to do that, they need to spend more money, and they potentially could do a rights issue. And I think that's why the stock's been under pressure. But once they've done that, it'll, I'm sure, be earnings accretive, in which case Mediclinic will run. Now, if you want to try and time it and sell the stock now and buy it back cheaper, it's not worth the effort. Just hold it. So hold it through the volatility.
Okay. Hang on to it. Don't go anywhere. Don't do a Gareth and be afraid and sell everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, cool. Gotcha.
And then I have to tell you about the Allianz, you know, the German insurance and asset management business. They put out a report, the wealth report, last week, uh-huh, and they had some interesting insights. And one of them was that out of the 53 countries that they measure, South Africa came 39th, so not great again, behind
Slovakia,
of all countries, right? And even Mexico, we're worse than them. And what they do is, they, in this report, obviously they measure a whole lot of things. So one of the things they measure is financial assets. And per capita, South Africa has 7,961 euros worth of financial assets. And that's the gross number. And I know that means nothing. So to put it in perspective, Switzerland is the top kind of asset, I don't want to say accumulator, but owner. Mm-hmm. And per capita, they have 260,804 euros per person. So we're way down in the sticks. I mean, I guess the good thing that this report showed is that household debt hasn't really increased, so it's still around 65%.
It's a lot.
It is a lot, though, unfortunately. And the other thing, the report is arguing against accommodative monetary policy and saying that how this quantitative easing, low interest rates, low inflationary environment means that asset growth just hasn't happened. So we've really not had much in the way of these assets that we've accumulated increase, and kind of that's a problem. And then I've brought Ferdy into studio with me this morning, and part of the reason I did that is because Adrian emailed last week and said, why do I not know what PPS is? So I want to put it in perspective. So I manage portfolios. So I have money market portfolios, share portfolios, bond portfolios, a mixture of them, right? And my job is to decide which companies or which bonds or which country bonds to put into the, or which assets to put into these different portfolios.
Right.
What Ferdy does, and he can tell you more himself, but he actually analyzes pension funds. So he knows what a lot of South Africans' pension funds look like. And yeah, he might have some insights for
hey,
you.
Hey, Ferdy, nice to have you here.
Hello, yeah, Gareth.
Cool.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. Okay, so first of all, is it a very complicated thing working in the same building as Anthea?
Not only in the same building, we're a couple of desks away, which makes it even more complicated.
Okay, so Ferdy, you are the guy who understands pension funds better than anyone else. Tell me, when it comes to managing huge amounts of money like that, is there a lot of complex stuff that goes on behind the scenes, or is it actually quite simple? Do you run it like you would any other asset, any accumulated, sort of shared asset, or is it something, it's an animal that needs its own roaming space and feed and all the rest of it?
Yeah, it's very different. So it's not the same as managing your own money or managing the money of a business. And the reason why it's not the same is because you're effectively managing money for people that you don't know.
Yeah.
And that you also know require that money to live off post-retirement. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure that you invest the assets broadly, make sure that you're not taking undue risk. But at the same time, the biggest risk that any person faces saving for retirement is actually not having enough money at retirement.
Right.
So you've got to strike that balance between an aggressive and a conservative investment approach. Try and maximize the returns, but at the same time, you need to make sure that you know, don't lose pensioners their money.
So what's the threshold? I mean, is it being able to have whatever money you have now plus the interest that gets you to where you'd need to be in the future?
Yeah, I think the key thing, Gareth, for everybody to understand is that a pension fund is not a magic hat.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people just magically assume that at the date they retire, they're going to have enough money to live on, sail off into the sunset, buy a little house by the beach.
Doesn't happen.
And that's not the case. See, in the old days, it worked like that because your employer actually paid your pension. So you went on retirement, no matter how much, you know, how long you worked or how much you saved, and you received a pension check every month roughly equivalent to your final salary. But it doesn't work like that anymore.
And also, people are living too long, right?
Way too long. we were talking about that this morning, you know, and I said to Anthea, I actually don't know. Even our generation, us here around the table, I don't know how long we're going to live, but I can tell you something, it's going to be longer than the actuarial tables predict.
Yeah, and then, you know, you have an extra maybe 20, 30 years that you have to provide for someone, effectively, that you didn't have to worry about before because they were dead.
Yes, and if you think about it, the average person works for 35 to 40 years, saves, if they lucky, 10% of their salary every month. A lot of people save less than that. And then expect to live for another 30 or 40 years off that 5 or 6 or 7% they saved every month. And just mathematically, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Does not compute.
And so that's why, you know, if you want to take a long-term property investment view, you know, start buying up properties with cottages and stuff on them, so, because we're all going to have our parents living with us at some point.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Basically, and in South Africa, that's kind of how it works too. Most people in South Africa will end up looking after their parents, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So we're not saving nearly enough. And then secondly, for even those of us who are, we don't factor in the fact that medical inflation is insane. So I know the Discovery put out the notices in the last week or so for medical funding increases for next year, between 10 and 15% increase.
Right. It's made them very unpopular.
And also, aren't people getting sick basically every day of their lives in their old age? So those expenses really do build up.
Yes, they do. You know, and unfortunately, you know, it's an unpredictable expense. You don't know if you're going to get sick, if you are. I'm starting to sound like an insurance salesman here. You know, you need to have a policy to pay for your funeral. But the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of uncertainty. And the thing is, once you've retired, you live off a dwindling pot of money.
Yeah.
You know, most retired people have limited ways of generating income post-retirement. So what they've got is what they have.
Uh-huh.
And every cent you spend out of that pot just sees, you know, a little bit more of your post-retirement savings eroded. And it's a frightening place to be in, you know, to lie awake at night because you've got X amount of money, but you also know that there's some big expenses looming.
And there's nothing you can do to add to that at that point.
There's nothing you can do to add to that. So while you're still working, you've got options. You can get a loan because you're still employed. You can repay the loan. You can extend your retirement. So you can say, well, I'll work another couple of years longer.
All you can do as an old person is sell what little you have.
That's right. You say, well, unless you're Donald Trump and
you have
a chance to run for president.
Some 70, 80, 90-year-olds are running for office all over the world. Okay, now let's talk about risk.
Okay. This is what I want to talk about.
Anthony only cares about this.
Because when you did your risk profile the other day and you came out with a 96, like, there was all fun and games, but actually I got quite a fright because I then went and looked at my personal portfolio, and not even my personal portfolio is a 96, by the way, and I have private equity investments in that. So I realized that we can't actually...
Just explain to everybody again, from 1 to 100, what is a 96?
Let's start 1 being very conservative and 100 being the most aggressive, most prepared to take risk, happy to put up with the volatility. And of course... the theory will tell you that your risk return metric starts, so the lower your risk, the lower your return, whereas the higher risk you take, the higher return you should get. That's the theory about behind it. And also what they don't take into consideration, of course, is time. So your portfolio may not necessarily be, shouldn't be the same as somebody who is 60 years old, for example. They can't afford to take risk because if the market collapses when they're 65, they're getting less out than when they were 60. So they should be in lower risk. Sure, they get lower returns, but at that stage of life, it's hard to say. So what I've decided with this Cliff Invest portfolio that we're looking at is I'm designing four portfolios so that we have a conservative, stable, growth, and aggressive. So you obviously will go into aggressive. I will probably be invested in a combination of growth and aggressive. And if you want, you can actually divide it up. So you can put, you can do 50-50. So you can do 50 in conservative, which will be bonds and money markets. So really low risk, so that there's very little chance that the portfolio will have a big drop or a big increase. It'll actually just kind of tick along quite nicely. Whereas the aggressive, there'll be lots of volatility. There's likely to be lots of volatility.
Right. And who can predict the market? So yeah, you take your chances.
Exactly, yes. But we'll do this risk analysis.
Right, so let's just explain to people again. What it basically means is that when we launch this investment portfolio, you will have four different portfolios to choose from.
Indeed.
And they are, again, conservative,
stable, growth, and aggressive, in okay. that order of riskiness.
Right. So if you do the risk analysis, yeah. and you come up as like a 32.
You'd be a combination of conservative and stable. So conservative will be 1 to 25. Uh-huh. And these are more or less numbers, right? So my portfolio, we'll analyze it. It'll actually have a number on it. So let's say the stable portfolio has a score of 35 and you come up with 40. Uh-huh. I recommend you go into the 35. Rather take less risk in the portfolios in your investments uh-huh. than more risk.
Okay.
So even you on your 96, if I don't think I'll have a portfolio that has a 96. It'll probably, the one I've got at the moment is about 85. Okay. So that's the most you can be, most risk I'm going to allow you to take.
All right. Well, then I'll probably have to go for almost all
yes,
aggressive.
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly
what do you think
right.
you would be, Mubs?
Definitely not aggressive. I haven't done mine yet. Anthea sent me a link for me to answer a few questions to determine my risk analysis. So as soon as I do that, I'll let you know.
You'll get a risk score.
I don't think I'll be anywhere near aggressive, though. That's I don't think
well,
so.
Well, that's
what's yours, Ferdy?
Because you're so young that actually you should be taking more risk. So that's kind of...
Don't judge her by her looks. You'd think she was 12. She's significantly more experienced in the world than she looks.
You see, this is where it's different in the pension fund world. Because yeah. when you're investing your own money, it's very important to understand what level of risk you're comfortable taking.
So but now you're investing for everyone else.
But if you're investing for everybody else in a pension fund, we take a completely different approach. So we say you're currently earning 10,000 Rand a month and you'd like to earn as close as possible to that 10,000 Rand a month when you retire one day. Mm-hmm. So then we calculate how much risk you need to take to grow your 1,000 Rand that's in your pension fund today to 10,000 Rand in 20 years or 30 years or whatever the
right.
case might be. So we use the risk scales quite differently to the way that a personal investor would use it in deciding what works for him. So,
okay.
you know, so from my own personal perspective, from at times I could have a very conservative risk profile, at other times very aggressive, depending on how far behind the goalposts I am.
Okay.
So also, if you're more aggressive, people tend to want to catch up. Is that right, Ferdy? That they kind of take a lot of risk. And what happens when people retire is they get to kind of in their late 50s and go, oh, I'm not going to have enough money to retire. And then they take, they become more aggressive in their investment approach. And I'm not sure that's necessarily the way to go.
No, that's absolutely not the way to go. And that is unfortunately why from time to time we see these horrible stories in the media about, you know, the yeah. share maxes and the like, where people are in trouble and they need these ridiculous returns to try yeah. and invest themselves out of trouble. And that's the one thing that is not possible. Sure. Can't invest yourself out of trouble.
Okay, so what we're doing with the Cliff Invest portfolio is we're going to make sure that a whole lot of people are investing alongside their pension funds in their own kind of personal capacity, and really so that they don't get to 50 or 60 and then they don't have enough money. So this is in addition to all of that. I think we want people to do that.
Very good. It sounds exciting. So there are going to be four different portfolios for you to choose from. Anthea will run all four of them, and depending on where you fit in the risk scheme of things, then you can decide which one of those four you need to be most invested in. Cool.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, Anthea. We'll see you next week, Monday, but we'll see you on the show tomorrow. We'll hear from you tomorrow on The Money Show. Thank you very much. And Ferdy, thank you. Very nice to meet you. There we go.
This is CliffCentral.com.